Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. The February 7th, 2024 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being made available on live teleconference for public access. CJ Rotella, Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on the combined in-person and telephonic meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. The meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Corinne Myers, General Counsel for RI Housing. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information on each of the actions being taken. If the teleconference portion is interrupted for any reason, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Chair of the Credit Committee, Kevin Orth, will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, please do state your name prior to speaking every time. With that, I will turn it over to Committee Chair Orth to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Kevin Orth. It's 9:35. I call the Credit Committee meeting to order. Carol, take attendance.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Orth.
Here.
Commissioner Warren.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cooper.
Here.
Great. Thank you. First item is the approval of minutes of the Credit Committee held on November 8, 2023. Motion to approve.
I probably should recuse myself since
you weren't here.
I wasn't here.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So move, and I'll second that. And Corinne, would you please take a...
All those in favor of approving the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on November 8th, 2023, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With 2 affirmative votes and 1 recusal, the motion is approved.
Thank you. Now move on to agenda item 2, which is recommendation for firm approval of financing for Otters Tigray?
Tigray, yeah.
Great, apartments, great. And Steph St. Jean will give us the introduction of this item.
Yes. Good morning. This is Steph St. Jean. The project is Potter's Tigray, and the developer is Swap, Inc. The request is for firm approval for not to exceed $8.7 million tax-exempt loan with a taxable first mortgage of not to exceed $475,000. Potter's Tigray was awarded funding in the 2023 consolidated round, and we are also seeking firm approval for the funding that was awarded in 2023 for CMF loan, DH2, and CRP funding. The proposed is a scattered site, 57-unit development in South Providence. The proposal includes both a rehab and new construction aspect to it. The moderate rehab portion will be the development known as Potter's Avenue, which is an existing post-year 15 LIHTC project with 37 units. The rehab will include exterior improvements, high-efficiency mechanical system updates, along with a lot of interior updates that are needed on the property. The new construction will be built on vacant lots previously purchased by Swap, creating 20 new units. Both components will be combined as a single economic unit moving forward. All 57 units will remain affordable to income ranges from 30 to 60% of AMI. The bedroom sizes are from 1 to 4 throughout. The 30% units will have 7 project-based vouchers, and 5 will benefit from the HPF ELI subsidy assistance. Since preliminary approval, the developer substituted 3 of the vacant parcels with 3 others that were more proximate for easier management oversight. TDC was reduced due in large part to the decrease in the acquisition cost based on the as-is appraisal. Swap was also awarded an additional $700,000 from the City of Providence. The syndicator is NEF and is projecting 92 cents per credit. The investor will be Webster Bank, and they will be the initial construction lender. Rhode Island Housing will come in with their construction period tax and bond to take out Webster Bank's loan at approximately 50% completion. The project conforms with Rhode Island Housing underwriting standards and the requirements for the rollover debt, with the exception of the bridge loan test, but the tax exempt loan is the minimum required to meet the 50% bond test to generate the 4% tax credits. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Do you have a motion to approve?
So moved. Jonathan Wilmer.
I'll second that one. Thank you. Any questions about this one?
I have a question.
Sure.
So the change in the acquisition cost, they swapped. Can you repeat that? They swapped.
So the change in the acquisition cost was mostly due to the as-is appraisal. So the as-is came in a lot lower than what was initially thought and submitted by SWAP. So that's why the change, it went down like $2 million. So the SWAP was, they had lots that they owned previously.
Mm-hmm.
So they took three of the lots that were in the initial proposal and preliminary and took and put three additional ones in there. So the three additional ones they put in were a lot closer to the other new construction lots. So it's just a lot easier
does
to...
Does that change any zoning requirements that they have to... Obtain or everything?
No, it didn't really change anything. I mean, they had to purchase three additional properties and put that in, so they had the deeds and everything that was all gone through, so.
This is a follow-up on that. So I don't quite understand that. So the acquisition goes down, and so they assume that goes down.
So
how much debt is right now?
So right now, this is Seth St. Jean. As we looked at the property initially, I believe they had about $3 million in rollover debt. So now the rollover debt's going to be down to $1.5 million, and that's a lot has to do with, you know, talking with NEF, the syndicator, and them doing their back-end analysis on top of the as-is appraisal that came in lower. So we had to figure out a way to lower the rollover debt so acquisition was a little lower.
How much existing debt's on the property?
Existing debt, about $3 million between Rhode Island Housing and City of Providence.
What's that? So they're rolling over $1.5 million of that $3 million. So what's happening with the other million?
So the other, they will be reaching out to the City of Providence to forgive. It's, I think one of them is a home loan. There's going to be some interest that's been outstanding on the property. So it's basically the outstanding interest and the home loan that are going to be main ones that...
That's not Rhode Island Housing debt.
So the Rhode Island Housing debt is going to stay in the rollover. They will be coming to us to forgive some of the outstanding interest, but the actual loan that's going to be sought to be forgiven is a home loan.
And that's not shown on here then?
Correct, yeah, not anymore.
I think we should show that. If we're forgiving debt, I think we should show it on here. There's an assumption that, you know, another agency is going to forgive debt. I think that should be made note of.
Okay.
Is there any, do you foresee any issue with Providence or whomever is the holder of the existing debt forgiving it?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think it's hit all the requirements.
Yeah.
Even with our home dollars, it's
yeah.
not uncommon when
okay.
we come into a preservation transaction.
Okay. So this was maybe federal sources?
It is federal. The home
yeah.
program is federal.
Okay.
And Kevin, just so you know, we meet monthly with the City of Providence about exactly these issues, projects that we have in common so that we all are on board and know that what the approach the other one's taking. So it's
okay.
And the interest rate is fairly high. The interest amount is fairly high because it's AFR, right? So
yeah.
dating these federal funds at AFR, so that interest ticks off.
It's really improved significantly.
Yeah.
Okay. Back at the preliminary in May of last year, a couple of the issues on this one was the high rehab cost. Is this justified? I mean, this was built, what, 15 years ago, and it's $100,000 a unit rehab already? Is that, to me, that's a pretty significant rehab.
Yes, this is Dean Harrison. That is significant. However, we had design and construction look at it, and they are reasonable for what they're doing.
Okay. So, I mean, they're the most beautiful, I think, properties in the existing neighborhood. So putting another $100,000 into them, I mean, it's going to make them very, very nice.
We hope they last, and they're family units.
Yes.
Right.
With family units, we know we see a lot of people.
A lot more wear and tear.
Yes.
I mean, this project was transformational 15 years ago, and this investment is going to keep it, you know, looking the way it should and keeping that whole neighborhood looking tremendous.
Yes.
I guess that was the other point, is that these are scattered site developments. They're, you know, and even the new construction is about two units a building. So it's they're not really financially feasible. They're sustainable, I guess, for the long haul. So did we do anything or propose anything maybe to make them more financially sustainable? And I know, Mike, we talked about the expenses last time running relatively high. Has there been any, I don't know, change in the plan to reduce that?
This is Michael DeCaro. Not that we've heard of from them.
Yeah.
It's a typical scattered site development. It's challenging. You don't get the economies of scale that you would at a larger scale.
But to be fair, SWAP has a critical mass of real estate in South Providence, so they do benefit from that, and they self-manage, which is an advantage, right? They can respond quickly. They're not relying on property management firms to bring in vendors. They self-manage these properties. I think the fact that they have a critical mass in this area helps them.
Right. And can they support more hard debt?
I think this is the transaction.
This is, I think it'd be tight.
It just seems like their rents are lower than they should be and their expenses are higher than they should be. And I just, do you see that the case, Mike?
That's Michael DeCaro. We did review it and the expenses are within reasonable range, we think. The rents are a little higher, but there would be a plan to increase rents before closing. So we'll make those if
Okay.
They're not so far off that it's not reasonable.
Like, to me, it looks like a great project. They do wonderful stuff in the neighborhood. This is really going to add to it, but it seems like it could be pushed a bit more to me.
Okay.
I don't have any other questions about it, though. Any comments or questions? Okay. Corinne, would you please take a...
This is Corinne speaking. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Potter's Tigray Apartments in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The affirmative votes, the motion is approved.
Thank you very much. We'll now move on to item 3, which is recommendation for firm approval acquisition financing for Marathon Development, LLC, the Copley Center, Providence.
And I'll just handle it.
Thank you.
This is Dean Harrison. Good morning, everyone. This request for action is for firm approval of Rhode Island Housing and Mortgage Finance Corporation taxable loan in amount not to exceed $2,720,000 for the acquisition of land in Providence, Rhode Island, to facilitate development of 178 units of housing to be known as Copley Center. Marathon Development, LLC, is the developer. The developer has entered into an option agreement to purchase 4.17 acres of land on the southern edge of Rhode Island Hospital Complex in Providence. The site is uniquely situated between the Linston campus of Community College of Rhode Island, Rhode Island Hospital, Women's Infant, Hasbro, Children's Hospital, and multiple medical office buildings. The purchase price is $3,400,000. The proposed acquisition financing is 75.5% of the appraised value of $3.6 million and 80% of the purchase price. Additional terms of the acquisition loans are outlined in the credit summary. As currently projected, all 178 units would be affordable to households between 30% and 70% of area median income. The developer has submitted a funding application under the current consolidated funding round. So we ask approval of the following: firm approval of a taxable acquisition loan in amount not to exceed $2,720,000, subject to certain conditions as set forth in the attached resolution. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Dan. I met a motion to... Thank you, Sarah. I'll second it. Kevin, any comments or questions about this one?
I'm just curious about the potential on the ground for the discussion, just on the area a little bit, not a lot around there.
The developer has been in touch with different community groups and continues to do so to kind of find the best fit for the commercial in the bottom floor. Obviously, he's looking at health-related type tenants.
Mm-hmm.
It's evolving. What this is we have the land bank loan program, which is for nonprofits. This is a similar program we're doing for now for for-profits. So this is really early on in the process. But from the conversation, he did submit a full consolidated application, which we are now reviewing to see if the uses are appropriate for the site.
Okay.
Had much success on Broad Street with a similar property, Jonathan, so I expect that there'll be a mix of service providers, you know, providing supportive services
mm-hmm.
to the residents of the property and other commercial centers.
And to be candid, one of the things that I think they succeeded at in the Broad Street properties is doing great community outreach and really getting a sense for what might be needed. So I don't have any doubt they'll do the same process with this property.
He's really transforming Broad Street with some of what he's doing.
Good.
What is the anticipation of ultimate funding for the development?
He's looking for additional funding from both the ARPA money, looking for additional funding from the state, from the City of Providence also.
Will this be a 9% or 4% tax credit?
Right now it's a 4% tax credit deal.
Mm-hmm. How does it pencil out?
We're still under review. We got a lot of applications.
I know. I need to, in a way, maybe prejudice our future lending decisions by, you know, land banking like this.
Yeah.
Does this appear to be a great opportunity?
Yeah. I think. Sorry.
No, it is, and the location is, you know, super. We look at that as part of the review. If for some reason he was to back out and we end up with the property, we can't.
This is a good property.
Yeah. Yeah.
And building on that, we've had conversations over the past year or two with, healthcare providers, Lifespan in particular, about they struggle with finding housing that their staff can afford to live in. So this, where it's located, might be an ideal spot for some of those folks to live and walk to work every day.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, this is Corinne speaking. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of acquisition financing for Marriott Development LLC for Copley Center in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is unanimous. The vote is unanimous.
Yes. Thank you. Now we'll move on to agenda item 4, which is recommendation for authorization of naturally occurring affordable housing, otherwise known as NOAA, loan demonstration program.
Mm-hmm. I will be presenting it. Yes, thank you. This is Dean Harrison once again. I'm really excited that we are finally trying to roll this program out. This request for action is for authorization to administer the Natural Occurring Affordable Housing, otherwise known as NOAA, demonstration program. The program was created to provide mortgage finance for non-restrictual, natural, affordable multifamily properties that do not need subordinate debt. With the approval of the program and the term sheet, the intention of the program is to provide financing to housing developers pursuing the acquisition and preservation of existing non-restricted housing with rents at 80% of the area median income, or less. In exchange, an offering requirements are less restricted than the conventional capital markets could provide. In summary, the NOAA loan will require the following. Most notably, the loan will be limited to the lower of 85% of the as-is value based on Rhode Island Housing Commissioned appraisal, or 1.2 debt service coverage. At least 40% of the units in the development are to be restricted to households earning no more than 80% AMI for a period of 20 years. A minimum of 5 units in the proposed development, maximum loan amount of $3 million. Only single sites are eligible, and nonprofits and for-profit developers are eligible to participate in the program. In addition, the program aims to minimize the size of potential rent increases on existing tenants while still balancing the needs of the developer to ensure adequate operating income to complete the transaction. Staff recommends approval of the attached resolution authorizing the administration and award of a taxable loan under the Natural Affordable Housing Loan Demonstration Program in accordance with the term sheets as Attachment A. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Dan. Motion to
move. Jonathan Moore.
Great. Thank you. Seconded by Sarah. Thank you. I'll start out by reminding, I guess, those here that were part of this back in 2021, we were discussing this program, and I might have gotten one project rolling on it with Providence, perhaps. Yes.
Sutton Place.
Yeah. And then it's kind of been dormant, I guess, for a little while. Interest rates were super low. Maybe that had something to do with it. Now they're up a little higher, and rents are continuing to go up. So I think it's a great program to have out there. But some of the issues I think we discussed last time, I'd just kind of like to bring up, I guess, again here. So this is really, it seems, as conceived, a program for properties that are smaller and would otherwise go into the tax credit program and don't really need the deep rehab after the tax credit program would pay for, subordinate debt would pay for.
Correct.
So a very light touch as well, so because we're not putting much subsidy in, so less oversight on our part, less restrictions on our part, I think. A couple of questions, though, I guess, is do we want to encourage, or not encourage, but we want to enable some level of rehab here? I know not a deep level, but maybe there's some level looking at maybe life safety issues, access issues, maybe, this is maybe getting a little more dollars, but maybe energy efficiency or water saving measures to reduce ongoing operating expenses, things like that. And therefore, should we look at the kind of as improved value? Maybe 90%.
As is.
Yeah, maybe 90% of as is or 85% of as improved value, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the good part about this is it's essentially a demonstration program.
Right.
So that as things come up, I think we can look at each one on its own merits. And if somebody comes in and says, well, you know, I'd also like to do $10,000 a unit, and as you say, maybe it's fire suppression or life safety or something like that, you know, we have the ability to do that. I think that makes sense. I mean, we do have some provisions in the term sheet that we will have oversight of any construction that does go on as part of this loan program. So to fold in some rehab costs to that, I don't think it's unreasonable if, as you say, we do the as-approved appraisal.
Yeah.
Okay. A couple of other points. I think to clarify, is this 80% rent restriction and income restricted or just rent restricted?
It's income restricted. So the idea would be that we're essentially paying to have these qualify as affordable sites under state law, which would be available to folks making up to 80% of their median income.
Okay, so we're making sure that residents do not earn more than 80%.
Correct.
And we're also restricting the rents to no more than 30% of 80% of AMI?
That's my understanding. I will go back and confirm. Yeah.
I mean, the developer will want to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then any explicit annual rent increases, or is it just whatever the AMI might go up to, somebody can take their rents to? Again, I know this is a light touch, so I'm not switching that, but I just want to be clear.
Yeah, this is Seth St. Jean. So I don't believe there's any explicit, you know, this needs to be the rent increase every year, but, you know, to that point, they're making up 80%. 80% rents typically, you know, go up, you know, on a yearly basis, so that'd be up to the owner to assess that and then make sure that they can make the payments soon.
Okay.
I don't see a rental percentage restriction in here.
No.
I think we need to think of how that was incorporated into the term sheet. I don't see it. And I think it is, I think it's something we should consider.
I guess also, especially if we're doing I think as envisioned, and maybe the deal that we're going to look at after this agenda item, no renovation.
Mm.
I don't think we want to be in the position of putting a loan out on a property and then having the rents jump way up.
Right.
Correct.
So I think, I know this is a case-by-case basis, but again, as we're rolling this out, I think it would be very helpful to the development community to know generally what the parameters are. In the term sheet, we can say something about rent shall not be increased more than, I don't know, 10, 3 years, or some parameters,
well,
especially if no rehab is being done.
If the units are going to count, then there has to be some rental restriction incorporated there and some amount of oversight by a monitoring agent that the units are going to continue to count over time. So if that's what this program is, unless we don't want to have any monitoring agent or any, so it's...
This is Dean Harris again. The intention is not obviously put rent burning on the individuals who live there now might qualify. So it is, we do look at that, and for certain place there was guidelines in place on how much we could increase the rents or the developer could increase the rents annually. There was some big ranges, so it was done. Here we address it in the next request for action, but it's not as tight as it was because they had all the soft money on the other deals.
Mm-hmm.
This is really intended, but the goal is to obviously not rent burning anybody or displace any of the covered residents for the properties. But we can look at tightening up the words.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. Obviously, when you get to this, I mean, there might be a big delta between the existing rents and the maximum rents that could be charged at 80%. And so, I mean, again, I don't think we want to go in there, provide a loan, no rehab, and then boom, the rents jump up, 20% or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. I guess the other thing is for this to be successful, I think it has to be a really low cost program, interest rate and low transaction costs. Right now, it's the 1% origination fee, which I think is very reasonable, especially given the low loan size.
Yeah.
But the costs are kind of an open, open. And so is it possible obviously it would be helpful if we could streamline documents, maybe we have form loan documents, maybe we do the closing in-house instead of hiring us for the outside counsel. If we do hire outside counsel, maybe it's at a low fixed fee. So the developer going in knows, okay, I'm going to be capped at this cost. And I know that there was some issue with the workforce housing loan program with outside legal fees, for instance. So if we can, I don't know if we cap it on a percentage basis or we... Yeah. You just say legal is just going to be capped at this and other costs are for this.
Well, I think we can regroup with Kara's team and talk about what that looks like. And
yeah, and for other programs, we do have fixed legal fees for closings, certainly. So it's not, we wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. It would be just figuring out what the value is for this program and establishing it. That's not a problem.
Yeah, okay. And then interest rate. I realize this is targeted to borrowers that are, maybe not have the net worth to go out and get a traditional Fannie Freddie or maybe a local bank loan. So maybe the interest rate can be a little bit higher than those products. But I think we're looking at maybe a 7.5% or something on this, and get a, that's like a 175 basis points of what you're ready at right now.
So this is Kara. I can speak to that. There really is not a funding source for these types of loans. So they can go to a traditional bank and get funding from a bank.
Maybe.
But we still have to make sure that we're covering our risks. And so for us, the funding source may be our lines of credit. It may be the Federal Home Loan Bank. We're looking into, how their advances would work with this program. But we want to make sure, because it is a demonstration program, we want to make sure that we're rolling it out conservatively.
Right. Is it, do you think we can shave some off of that rate? Or
I don't. We definitely have talked about it, and you know, it, where the market is now, I think it's priced correctly.
Okay. Last comment, and that is on compliance. That'll be another point, I think. How you say they're going to be both income and rent restricted? So how are we going to, with a light touch, but how are we going to make sure they're in compliance?
I'll take it. So I think we'll monitor it in a similar fashion that we do workforce housing deals.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make sure that everyone's income certified. We'll spot check the files, making sure that they qualify. We'll visit the property and do audits once every 3 years versus every year. And we'll allow self-certifications after the initial movement. So if you move in, you're qualified, we'll allow that resident to self-certify. Yep.
Okay. And that sounds pretty good. Has that worked well with the workforce?
It's kind of just that kicked off the ground. We haven't really dug in deep to workforce yet, but initially the initial lease up kind of went fine. We've opened up our online portal to the managers to submit all their tenant data to us. So.
Okay. I think that'd be helpful to put on the term sheet,
terms of
compliance. I think that would be a benefit to know to would-be users that, hey, it's going to be a pretty light touch, and I can handle that,
mm-hmm.
especially for somebody who's got six units or something. They don't want to take on a big burden.
Right.
I'm sorry. Lastly, students eligible for this? Are students eligible?
We have not allowed it in the workforce housing, and I assume that we would not allow that here also.
Might want to just state that. Yeah.
Okay.
I won't ask any more questions. Did I leave enough air in the room for any other questions?
Good question.
No. Okay. Corinne, would you please take a vote?
Sure. This is Corinne speaking. All those recommending authorization of the naturally occurring affordable housing loan demonstration program as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With three affirmative votes, the motion is approved.
Thank you. I'll move on to it. I shall know of products. Recommendation for firm approval of financing for 129 to 137 Garfield Street in
Seth will
present. Thank you, Seth.
Thank you. Good morning, this is Seth Fainching. The project is 129 to 137 Garfield Street, and the developer is Simcoe Realty LLC. The request is for an acquisition loan through Rhode Island Housing's NOAA loan demonstration program that we just discussed, for a not-to-exceed $1,232,000 loan. The two-building development is 13 two-bedroom units with rents currently at or below 80% of area median income. To support the underwriting projections upon acquisition, the developer increased rents for existing residents. The developer is taking on a phased approach to minimize disruption to the residents. You know, as we discussed, we don't want to have anyone displaced. The new proposed rents remain below the maximum 80% of AMI rents currently in Central Falls. The not-to-exceed loan is sized based off of 85% of the as-is appraised value as required on the term sheet. I will note that based on the interest rates and income projections currently, the loan is likely going to be lower and is currently projected at $1.18 million to meet the 1.2 debt coverage ratio requirement. The developer has confirmed any difference in the loan amount will be made up with owner equity. The project conforms with Rhode Island Housing Underwriting Standards as it relates to the NOAA demonstration program, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
May I have this item? Thanks,
Jonathan Wilmer. Second.
Thanks, Jonathan. Questions, comments about this one? I'll jump in. Do you have... do you know what the rents, how much the projected increase from the existing level?
Yeah, so, you know, based on the appraisal that we got, it looks like the rent increases are mostly going to be, you know, closer to the market. So in Central Falls, the market rate rents are actually significantly lower than the 80% of area median income. So, you know, on average, I would say, you know, there's like a 6 to 15% increase on those rents initially.
I'm sorry, 6 to 15%?
And, you know, the developer still has to get in there and income certify everyone, too. So, you know, those projections could change as we move towards closing. You know, and obviously we did the up to amount on the 85% of the as-is. So, you know, technically the loan could be lower if, you know, they can't achieve those initial rent increases.
And is there any cap on the annual rent increase, or is that, say, and over a certain time? Seems like that would be a pretty big jolt to someone.
It could be. It definitely could be. We have not set a standard yet for annual increases. I think one of the difficulties that most of these developers cannot get in and get information on the current residents, which kind of handcuffs them, because they're acquiring properties. Most of the sellers do not allow. We had the same issue in, on Sutton Place, that you're not, they don't want somebody going in and asking about income questions at this point. So once he acquires a property, that's when he'll do an income qualification of the current residents and then see what the current rents are for them, you know, and whether it's qualified.
You know what the current rent levels are, irrespective of what the resident's income is.
Right, we do know that, yes. Yeah. Rent rolls, yes.
And we know what they want to increase their rents to, so can't we put in a certain increase amount, phase it in?
We could. I think that we'd like to see, I mean, if they're all qualifying and, you know, and but one person's paying 100 versus somebody's paying 1300, you know, they're never going to get to 1300 in the next 5 years if you do a $50 increase, but you still got to make sure that's financially feasible for them to operate the property over the,
well, I think
the service.
The developer would make sure he's not going to default on his loan.
Yes.
Especially if we're not doing any rehab, I don't think we want to be providing a loan that then the residents get stuck with a 15% rent increase from day one. It just doesn't.
I think we can evaluate what it looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just looking at what the proposed gross rents are, I think I think Central Falls is right now. I don't confine apartments in Central Falls, just given the proximity now of the train station and everything the mayor has expressed. Real concern about people of Central Falls being able to live in Central Falls. So I think we can look at that,
okay.
Get what it looks like right now, make sure that, you know, this isn't outrageous in terms of what the increase is.
Okay, good, thank you.
Jonathan, one more to follow up on that. If I'm reading this correctly, it says that some of the existing residents will have rent increases. Implies to me that some won't. That seems, you have any knowledge of like kind of why some wouldn't have
but I think
because the rents are already at a level that is, you know, all right.
Yeah, this is not changing. You know, some of the rents are already a little higher than others, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the residents have lived there a long time too, so I think that a lot of that's taken into account, you know, depending on what their rent is, but you know, exactly to your point, you know, somewhere a little higher, so that percentage would be, you know, a lot smaller.
But I hear you. We don't want our program creating displacement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or hardship.
Right.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions? No. Thank you. Corinne?
Yes. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for 129 to 137 Garfield Street in Central Falls, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The vote is unanimous.
Great. Thank you. I'm moving on to agenda item number 6, which is recommendation for approval of transfer of municipal assets to the Tower Apartments located in the province.
Yes. I'll take this one. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Dean Harrison again. Hopefully this is a simpler one than the last couple. This request for action is an administrative action required under our general rules governing multifamily loan programs. The request for action is for approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in the Tower Apartments, sometimes referred to as 160 Broad Street, an affordable housing development in Providence. The Tower is a 176-unit development comprised mostly of single-room occupancy units. The general partner is an affiliate of Crossroads Rhode Island, and Crossroads is also the property manager. The development's initial 15-year compliance period ended in 2019, and the regulatory agreement will expire in 2033. The transferee intends to build a new property adjacent to the Tower to be known as Summer Street. which received firm approval from Rhode Island Housing Financing on November 2023. As part of the Summer Street transaction, the current rental subsidy contracts for the tower would be assigned to Summer Street, the Summer Street owner. During construction, there will be a master lease between the Summer Street owner and the limited partnership to ensure that the existing tower residents remain in place. Upon completion of the new Summer Street property, the existing tenant residents will be relocated to the new building and the master lease will be terminated. The current limited partner seeks to exit the limited partnership prior to the execution of the master lease. Crossroads will assume all existing obligations encumbering the tower. They intend to renovate the tower once Summer Street is complete. So we ask approval of the following: approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Travelers Aid Housing LP from Santander Bank to Crossroads, Rhode Island. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Dean. I have a motion to approve this item.
So moved.
Second.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. Comments about this one? It's pretty straightforward, and this is obviously a project that we're very familiar with.
Yes.
All right. Do you have any comments or questions about this one? We'll go to a vote, please.
All those in favor of recommending the approval of a transfer of physical assets for the tower apartments in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Three affirmative votes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. So that concludes our items. Now, two discussion items. The first one is a review of our five-year production plan. And James?
I drew this particular straw, yeah. As we came last year to get approval for the five-year production plan, and part of that approval was that we would come back and do periodic updates to the credit committee about what the plan looks like, how it's evolved, and any large changes that have been made. I'm very happy to say most of our projections have thus far been borne out, and we don't have a lot of major changes to the plan. A couple of things just right up front that I think was feedback from the committee last time were just kind of some ministerial things spelling out the type of beneficiary, what programs fell into what pot as far as, you know, who is actually served by the program, and then also just outlining on an AMI basis what programs serve what tranches of AMI. So we have a couple of charts in there right up at the front that will hopefully make that a lot clearer. I think the first one, you know, really the type of beneficiary is great because you really do see the volume of programs we're administering. I mean, this is not a small amount.
Yeah.
So I say that, you know, really just to highlight the work that everybody in the organization does, on a lot of different programs, a lot of different guidelines, regulations, and I think we do an excellent job. I'm just going to highlight the main changes to this, and then certainly any questions or any thoughts, folks, I'm happy to discuss. Most of the changes that we've made have been positive ones. You'll note that we were gambling on your approval today, and we've added the NOAA program in there to the five-year production plan, and really that's something that we're very excited about moving forward, because I do think it's kind of an underserved market that we have and something that we'll be able to increase the percentage of affordable housing in a number of communities kind of organically rather than with new construction. We do have $3 million allocated for that in this year, and you'll notice it says unknown because it is a demonstration program. We want to see what the uptake is going to be, and then when we come back the next time, we should have some better projections going forward based on the market and what we can afford to do. So, you know, one of the things I do want to stress for each one of these programs is that whether it's homeownership, developments, leased housing, everybody works hand-in-hand with finance to make sure that we can pay for all the stuff we want to do. It's a really important thing, and that, you know, Harris team has done an amazing job in the past year where it's been a challenging market to predict, and, you know, with interest rates rising and a lot of other things happening that may be in the future less certain. To give us a baseline that we can say, this is what we think we're going to do, these are the programs we think we can do. And as we go along, you know, every 6 months or so, we'll be updating this to reflect market conditions as well as how our programs are being absorbed by the public. So So we've added NOAA. Another big change that we have in a positive way is we have an allocation of what's called home ARP. It is home dollars that are tied directly to the American Rescue Plan, and they're principally used to serve extremely low-income individuals, individuals with intellectual, developmental, or physical disabilities, and folks exiting homelessness. We, at the time, we have more development dollars than we've ever had before. So originally there were $9 million program for housing development. We were able to move $7 million of that over into a service bucket that will be able to provide services for those populations and support the housing that we're building for them. So that was great. We were able to work with HUD to amend our plan and get that done. We'll see also on the homeownership side, we've had a great response from our first gen program, which is a $25,000 grant to qualified home buyers in specific areas in the state, low income areas that are predominantly communities of color. And we've programmed $1 million over the next four years in support of that program because of the success we've had deploying it and creating home ownership opportunities and generational wealth in some of our least served communities in Rhode Island. We're also in the process of finalizing some program guidelines for a turnkey program. One of the things that we suffer from in Rhode Island is a shortage of starter homes for folks who are trying to get into that market, particularly in a high interest rate climate. You know, you can open the paper every day, today's no exception, and read about the lack of housing supply in the state across all income levels. But it's really very acutely felt on the kind of first home, starter home market. And so we're looking at, and we're in the kind of the final stages of working through a program that will be a turnkey program to spur some starter home production. We'll have a better update on that. Actually, you'll see a program probably before the next time we update this, you know, for your approval. But it's something that we want to include in there because we think it's going to come out in the next, within the next 6 months. For this calendar year, we are increasing our HIF program also to help with home ownership. A lot of the programs that we're administering on the SFRF side are rental specific. So we've heard from developers and we've seen from applications that there is a market for more single family home ownership development. And for this year and potentially down the road, we haven't projected out yet, we've increased that to $4 million for this year to make sure that home ownership development doesn't lag behind the multifamily stuff that we're doing on the other side. For the most part, everything else has stayed fairly static. One of the things that we're keeping an eye on and our policy folks are very involved in is there's a potential tax bill in the Senate right now, which if passed would allow us to get a 12.5% bump in our annual allocation of low-income housing tax credits. It would be something that would really be helpful to us and really help probably fund at least one more project a year. So we're keeping an eye on that. For those of you out there, please contact your senators and representatives and support that. But that's something that in the next iteration of this plan 6 months from now, we may see an uptick in our allocation of tax credits over the next few years because of if the legislation passes. Just as an aside, it's not reflected in this, but another aspect of that legislation is reducing the 50% test for tax-exempt bonds and 4% deals to 30%, which would, again, help us kind of get that done using less volume cap and allowing us to potentially do more deals. So that would be, both of those would be really helpful for our general production down the road. Again, I think this has kind of been a great exercise for us, not just in trying to forecast what we're going to be doing and how we're going to be doing it, but because of the nature of it, it involves pretty much every department head in the organization getting together and talking through the challenges, the successes, and what we expect to come. And apart from the document that you have in front of you, I think that's a really useful exercise for us because a lot of times we're all kind of skating in our lanes and working on our own business lines. And to be able to come together and talk through as a group about what we're doing production-wise, single-family, multifamily, preservation, tenant services, our continuum of care stuff and the stuff we do with folks exiting homelessness. It's really been a very useful thing for us to kind of get together and have everybody hear what the other folks are doing and how, you know, we're not just siloed. A lot of this stuff is all wrapped together. And with the obviously with the backbone, as I said, of the finance group, because all of the programs, for the most part, that we run have the influence of the market upon them. And so taking that big picture look every few months to be able not only just to present to the credit committee, but to kind of share information and have a common understanding of where we're going has been really, really useful and very, very helpful. And I would just like, for the record, because I'm sure she's listening, to call out Stacey Wasserman, who compiled this, who kind of corralled the cast and make sure everybody gets together and, you know, meets on this, and she maintains the many, many changes that that we go through and the iterations that we do before this gets to you. So I just want to thank her for the great work that she does. Happy to answer any questions about this.
I'm sure we've all absorbed all of this already.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for putting this together and for the presentation.
Well, and certainly if you have questions, you know, at the next meeting or what have you, you can answer as well once you have time to look through and review.
That would be great, yeah. I might have one question now.
Sure.
Only because you brought up the turnkey program, mm-hmm. and you know, it's certainly, obviously, you know, starter homes are really important. Problem that, you know, we need to focus on. I was just wondering if you could just say briefly, like, how you envision that program maybe to be intertwined with the first generation home RI program and the first home tax credit program, and just kind of like what, how those might work together or.
Sure. Well, put kind of simply, you know, we've noticed, and also on our down payment assistance programs, we've heard from borrowers that, you know, they can get qualified for mortgage and are ready to go, and they. There's nothing in their price range. There's nothing out there that, you know, when they're ready and they've done everything they can do to get themselves financially ready to take the next step in their lives, that we just don't have, product.
Yeah.
There's just nothing out there. So it will work hand in hand with that in the sense that, you know, we can market it directly to folks who are already involved in it, mm-hmm. the mortgage fronts,
mm-hmm.
folks who may already have come in for down payment assistance. Or come in, you know, whether it's the first gen program or our 10K DPA, or if there's more, you know, state funded down payment assistance we'll administer. We have an audience already for products like the turnkey program that we can say, well, we're working with these developers to develop these starter homes. We want to make it available
yeah.
to you. We want to make you aware
mm-hmm.
ahead of time, like it's in construction, this is happening. You know, kind of prove, we do, you know, we work with thousands of households every year in our first mortgage program, and it's really helpful for us to be able to disseminate that information so folks can have them understand that, okay, I've got my qualification, but maybe there's a waiting list for this development of, you know, starter homes that's happening. Maybe I should do that. You know, you can get in there a little bit early and let people know what's going on, which is really helpful, I think.
Yeah. Folks. Oh, thank you.
Because one of the things I think, you know, we've heard is it's extremely frustrating for folks to, you know, I mean, we've
right.
all, you know, folks who are homeowners have at one point saved up, and, you know, it's a frustrating, stressful process. When you get there, you're like, oh, wow, I got my loan. I just can't spend the money now
yeah.
because there's nothing out there. So I think this has come out of feedback we've gotten from borrowers, feedback we've gotten certainly from the realtor community as well, of,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't have anything to sell these folks. So I think it should be good.
I think we're good at focusing on bottlenecks.
Mm-hmm.
I think the team here is really good at maximizing where we can add value. And we know that it is extremely difficult to take people from shelter and put them into housing they can afford. We know that it's very difficult for first-time home buyers to find a home that they can buy. And we know that it's important to keep the housing that we have affordable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the NOAA program, speaking to the ability to serve what's needed. So I think this team is fantastic.
It's a tremendous amount of programs.
We've got a lot of stuff going on, yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I just want to note that Secretary of Virginia is very interested in our first gen program, and he's wanting to replicate it in Virginia. Terrific.
I don't know if folks had the opportunity to watch Senate television last week and see our executive director testifying in front of Senator Whitehouse's committee, but, you know, one of the highlights that the work Rhode Island is doing and the work that Carol has been leading is being recognized on a national level, and it's pretty cool to to see your boss up there from the side.
Well,
not under subpoena.
Yeah.
Not yet. Give me time.
That's great. I think, well, I'll take some time to digest.
Yeah, add to the next. But
okay.
If you have questions, jot it down.
That'd be great. Okay, perfect.
Yeah. Oh, right here.
That'll be $10.
Right. Do we have a quick pipeline?
If you don't mind, I
yeah, that'd be great.
Dean Harris again. Okay, I'm going to touch base on the consolidated funding round. We are on target with our schedule. My staff is doing a wonderful job at keeping focus, getting the items that we need to hopefully make the board May committee meeting, credit committee also in May. So we are in basically the level. We've done some initial due diligence, and we're reaching out for some clarification, some items. And so we're doing on target there. Regarding deals in the pipeline, we did have a few come back due to increase in construction cost or delays in scheduling receiving material, also because of the interest rate. So we're reviewing that as part of the application, and we're hoping to get those moved along quicker to keep these developments on track to close. As you know, they have a lot of OPA money, and the goal now is to get that OPA money funded and on the streets. In the pipeline itself, we roughly have about 15 projects working towards firm commitment in all different stages, and we continue to work to get those to firm approval and then to closing also.
Right. In general, how would you characterize the deals that got funded in May 2023? Are we mostly on track for imminent closing, or we have issues across the board?
I would say there are many of them have issues simply because in the past year there's been an increase in borrowing costs, increase in construction costs, and certainly anticipated or realized delays in material delivery that Dean was referencing. I think they're on a range of, I think, but for the gap that they've incurred, they're ready to go. And so it's one of the things that we're prioritizing and looking at these, how can we get them to close this spring and move forward? They're still on target, mm-hmm. Provided we can fill those gaps. So that's obviously the priority for us, that the deals that are ready to go, we get moving. And as Dean said, to get the SFRF dollars out the door as quickly as possible, because they do have a termination date of December 2026. So I think I would say that the developers are doing what they needed to do. They've been in contact with us the whole time. Nobody kind of sprung a surprise like, oh, hey, how you doing? Haven't heard from me in a couple months, but I need $5 million, you know? Folks have been upfront and candid about what the challenges are, and we've been working with them, you know, the whole way to see what we can do.
And just to add to James, this is Dean Harris again, and the deals that haven't had a gap, they are working quickly to get the closing. They all understand that getting this money on the street is the best for all of us to do, so they're really focused and determined to get closed. So we're really excited.
Nothing gets cheaper with them.
Okay, exactly. And so those that have a gap, are you working on a case-by-case basis, and you think that's most appropriate?
Yes, and absolutely. Okay. And as Dean said, it's possible that once we get through some initial looks at what they've resubmitted, we may be able to bring some of those forward sooner than May, mm-hmm. because they already have commitments from Rhode Island Housing, and you guys are familiar with the deals, mm-hmm. as are we. So hopefully the timeline with that might be a little bit quicker.
Yes.
All right, good.
Thank you. Okay. We'll be before Senate Finance tomorrow night.
Yes.
Have a discussion about SFRF and housing.
Okay.
As if you weren't already tuned into Capital TV, it's riveting television.
4:30.
All right. Great.
I'll see you there.
There you go.
I think it'll be 5:30, but... I think it's scheduled. I thought it was scheduled for 5:30, not 4:30. But.
Okay, well, if it's 5:30.
But anyway, hope so. Great.
Motion to adjourn.
So move, John Womer.
Great. Second. Great. Thank you. I think we all say aye to that.
Favor?
Yes.
Aye.